Ladies and gentlemen, the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report, HagmannReport.com. That's where all of the information is available for you. We broadcast Monday through Friday, 7 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on the Global Star Radio Network. I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us. Thanks so much for your belief and your trust in us. You know, Obama's criminal enterprise, the enterprise that he set up during his tenure in office, the wheels are coming off. You've got former FBI Director James Comey, his best friend Robert Mueller. Take your pick on the pronunciation. Of course, you know, his good buddy there acting as independent counsel. You've got Loretta Lynch under... Well, I'm going to tell you right now, Loretta Lynch is under the scope of criminal investigation. You've got James Comey under the scope of criminal investigation for his release of classified information in the form of the memorandums to file that were given to his buddy at the university for dissemination through the media leaker himself. And you've got Hillary Rodham Clinton herself that should be under investigation, of course, her ties to Russia, Uranium One, among other many other things, the Clinton Foundation, all of the money, questionable monetary transactions with the Clinton Foundation. You've got Huma Abedin Anthony Weiner. You've got, need I go on? Of course. Also, today, 1 year ago today, Seth Rich, DNC operative, murdered on the streets of Washington, D.C. Investigation means slow walked or no walked by the FBI or by the Washington Metropolitan Police Department. The information is very limited. Now, on my Twitter feed this weekend, I commented, and by the way, my Twitter feed is at HagmannPI, which is separate from the show, because sometimes Joe and I disagree. Sometimes I don't agree with hey, it happens. But here's the deal. There is an audio, between a journalist, Neil, and of course, Brad Bauman, the, individual, the family spokesman. It's a audio file. You can find it off my Twitter feed at HagmannPI, two N's, HagmannPI. And by the way, please follow my Twitter feed because there will be some important announcements coming up, and that's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it on the Twitter feed first and concurrent with the show. But and I'm not exactly 100% sure what date this took place. The date really doesn't matter. But the questions between Brad Bauman, the family spokesman for Seth Rich, and Neil, the man asking the questions, it's incredible to me. This is a family spokesman. My comment on Twitter, very simply, there is so much wrong with this, I don't even know where to begin. For a family spokesman, wow. If that's what he's suggesting that he is, he certainly is not doing the family any favors, and certainly not acting as a spokesman. So check that out as well. But 1 year ago today, and of course the mainstream media won't cover it. The new media is covering it. We do want to push for a resolution. Be careful ladies and gentlemen, who you follow on this. Be careful who you listen to. We neither want to overstate the issues nor understate the importance of certain issues. Our analysis has to be measured and accurate. Just so you know, that's my view on the Seth Rich case.
Now, I didn't hear the...
Go ahead.
I did not hear the audio that you're referring to on your Twitter feed. You want to give a teaser out there for people who...
Well, honestly, you really have to listen to it. I got through it. It's difficult to listen to only because there is the... look, the interviewer did a fine job. Neil, the gentleman asking the questions did a fine job. It was this Brad Bauman who said he's the family spokesperson who provided zero information, frankly.
Okay.
And as a family spokesperson for a family of a murder victim, there's a lot wrong with this, all right? Are you trying, as the family or as a loved one, are you trying to find the murder? Are you trying to find a resolution to the murder? Or is there something else going on here?
Well, not listened to the audio, but just seeing all the statements and accusations and other things that this guy has made, it seems like he's less concerned about finding who is guilty and more concerned about shielding certain parties from any kind of suspicion. And if the interview is anything like what we've seen from him over this past 6 months, then I can imagine it's pretty bad.
Well, as having dealt with the families of murder victims, it's incredibly emotional. The emotions are all over the map, and you have it's a very delicate area. You have to really treat the family with respect, of course. However, you also have to understand that the family has got to understand that an investigation must be conducted, regardless, now by the police department or by the investigating body, we'll say. So, in other words, if your family member was murdered, the police become involved, whichever police agency would be the overseeing agency would become involved. Regardless of where it leads, you've got to be cooperative. You've got to answer the questions, as uncomfortable as they might be. Now, with respect to Seth Rich, because of all of the elements involved in this, you don't want to politicize the investigation. Regardless of, this could be a Democratic staffer, this could be a Republican staffer. I guess what I'm saying is, you, as an investigator, you cannot afford to politicize the investigation, but you must look at the politics within the situation in order to establish motive, perhaps means and opportunity as well. What I'm telling you is this: while you can't use the investigation as a weapon in the political venue, you have to consider politics as a potential motive. You have to consider his actions in the days, weeks, perhaps months before his murder, because that could contribute to a motive for his murder, especially when it's gone unsolved for a year. And however, getting back to this interview with Brad Bauman, I would like to sit across the table from Brad Bauman, and I would like to interview this man, because, and I mean, I would hit him with direct head-on questions, and as a matter of fact, I might extend an invitation off-air to do just that, if he is going to be a true family spokesman. But folks, the bottom line is this: don't forget, it was a year today that Seth Rich lost his life to an assailant or assailants. The motive remains unclear. The means, of course, was gunshot wounds, too. One through and through, one exit, or one entrance, no exit. That much we know. We don't know anything about the ballistics. We don't know. There's no autopsy report. There's really very little. I'll give you an example on this case. Brad Bauman refused to disclose the hospital that Seth Rich was taken to, citing privacy concerns and citing the fact that he did not want to jeopardize the investigation. I have never, in 30 years and multiple homicides, I have never heard that, ever, not one time, not once, as adversely affecting a homicide investigation. Yet, this is what Brad Bauman had stated. Oh, yeah, I can't because, you know, that would potentially jeopardize the murder investigation. No, it wouldn't. Has nothing to do with that. All you're doing is you're putting speed bumps in the road and you're deflecting. And there's a lot wrong with his answers. Now, this I am stating. This is my professional viewpoint with respect to this particular case. And so that was just one example. It's worth the time to go find it, to take a look at it. I was going to do I will do an analysis on this. I just haven't had the chance. It's been a very busy weekend. And the last week as well. But the fact of the matter is, there are so many things wrong with the Seth Rich homicide investigation. According to Bauman, one thing I did hear in this particular interview was the family apparently has got the Metropolitan Police Department determined that the computer, ostensibly the computer that they were looking for, had nothing to do with the murder whatsoever, so they returned it back to the family. This is at least my understanding of this. Well, says who? And he'll comment on that, but he won't comment on the destination, the hospital where Seth Rich was taken to. I find this extremely,
weird.
I find it very weird. So there's just, again, in my view, there's something flashing down there. I don't know. Do we have an emergency light going? Is there some sort of emergency?
No.
All right. But there's so much wrong with this. And again, I think if people want justice for Seth Rich, they need a resolution. A resolution must be had for this murder case. And I've worked cold case homicides before. They're not easy. They're not fun. It's a lot of work. But please be careful with who you listen to. I'm just throwing that out. Be very cautious as to who you listen to with respect to who's giving information. And be sure to separate speculation from reasoned speculation from fact. Because a lot of times that gets all munged up and people think something is true when it's not. So that's that. And of course, a couple of other things on my radar, but the big thing is this, and we're going to be developing this as the program does unfold. The Obama criminal enterprise is collapsing. The wheels are coming off this bus. You better take a look at Mueller. I believe that Mueller should be immediately fired, terminated. Yes, I was wrong in a previous program. Obama can, in fact, terminate, fire, get rid of Mueller as special counsel. So that should be done. The interaction between Comey and Mueller should be investigated, the collusion there, because all Mueller is doing is stocking up all of the Obama Clinton lawyers into this stable, this corral of attorneys. These are swamp attorneys.
Yeah, it is weird that
go ahead.
How many of these attorneys are and have been Clinton donors, have been Clinton lawyers, or have other connections to the Clinton campaigns or the Clinton Foundation? I just think, based on statistics alone, the number of people that are associated with Clinton that Mueller has brought on it's obviously very slanted, and it's done so on purpose. And I do agree, and we've talked about this many times, that he should recuse himself for conflict of interest reasons. First and foremost being his relationship and friendship with James Comey, And there are many other questions that that arise with where his loyalties may lie. And it's all since come out that the whole Russia narrative is and has been a hoax made up, not only to undermine and discredit the president, but to try to stonewall his agenda. So what really are they continuing to investigate? It seems like they're just causing more trouble based on factless.
Exactly. Well, you're right.
It's all, yeah. It's just a big joke. And, you know, we continue to see stories that Project Veritas last week did a number of exposés exposing different CNN producers and, pundits and their true feelings on what's going on with the Russian narrative. And as you said earlier at the beginning of the show, there is more information coming out about James Comey.
Yes.
And, there's an interesting, there's two pieces on Hagmann Report about this. One is ABC, NBC, and CBS ignore new damning Comey report. And it talks about how the mainstream media is ignoring the fact that Comey memos reportedly held classified info, which made it illegal for him to leak either by himself or through his friend to the mainstream media. And that's a law you cited. I think it's 18 USC.
Well, the Records Act.
Right.
There's a couple of things, including but not limited to the Records Act, which may or may not apply. And there is such a thing as retroactive classification of documents, which might apply or be applicable in this case.
Right, meaning if he released the memo, then they went and classified certain information that was in the memo after the fact.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And by the way, at the bottom there, we're going to have Trevor Thomas on. He is a tremendous author. I just can't wait. But at the bottom there, I'm going to we'll tell you a little bit more about Trevor. Trevor Thomas. He's from American Thinker, and I want to say thank you so much to American Thinker Thomas Lifton, the editor there. What a great guy. The people at American Thinker, when I say people, the authors, the contributors, those people who write for American Thinker, the best of the best in my view.
And we have there's a new piece from Peter Chowka up on Hagmann Report. Stephen Cohen on Tucker Carlson praises Trump-Putin meeting as most important and as most important summit since World War II.
Peter Chowka is an intellectual great man. I mean, I seriously, folks, I've gotten to know Peter Chowka, and I'm not blowing smoke for the sake of doing this. Peter Chowka is really, I mean, you talk about, sit down and have a conversation with him, have a cup of coffee with him, and to experience the wealth of knowledge that he's got. So I really highly recommend it. Of course, Peter's articles, as well as others, including Trevor Grant Thomas from American Thinker. But American Thinker's got just a collection, just a great collection of writers and true American thinkers. By the way, Portions of Nice Broadcast brought to you by Pro Flowers. When is the last time you surprised your wife, your girlfriend, your boss? Hey. Or your that special someone in your life. When's the last time you've done that? When's the last time that you spontaneous surprised someone with something completely unexpected? And what was it like? Oh, you know, I surprised my wife with a bouquet of flowers from proflowers.com. In fact, they've got something, and I'm going to be talking about this later, but they've got something called the Farm Stand Flowers Collection. It is just a magnificent gift. Folks, here's what you do. Go to proflowers.com, use our coupon code Hagmann in the microphone box, and then at checkout for some very special deals. More on that later. But anyway, you know, and folks, definitely in these times of turmoil, trouble, and what have you, definitely stop and smell the flowers, literally and figuratively. Really, it does your heart good. And I was thinking today too, and just a little bit of a side note, Joe. Lady, the studio dog. I don't know if she's here. I know I brought her to the studio, but I'm not sure where she might be. But anyway. 3 years old tomorrow, so happy birthday, Lady the Studio Dog. And I asked Eric what he planned on getting her, so And anyway.
Switching gears here.
Yes,
I don't know how many
ahead.
People saw this. How many of you guys remember the Women's March organizer, Linda Sarsour?
Oh, this, oh, man, if there's anyone that should be arrested for, I also commented on this on my Twitter feed, sedition.
I was
sedition.
Surprised by this. There's an article on Hagman Reporter, comes from the Daily Caller. Linda Sarsour defends her use of jihad and blames conservative media. Women's March organizer Linda Sarsour defended her call for jihad against the White House Sunday, blaming the outrage over her use of the word on conservative media in a Washington Post op-ed. Muslim activist Sarsour called for jihad against the White House during a speech she made at the Community Service Recognition Luncheon July 1st. After drawing outrage for using the term jihad, Sarsour defended herself by saying she used the term to mean struggle or to strive for. In my speech, you can watch the unedited version here, I sent not a call to violence, but a call to speak truth to power and to commit to the struggle for racial and economic justice. I was speaking to an all-Muslim audience. As an American, I should be free to share and discuss scripture and teachings of my beloved prophet, Sarsour wrote. Sarsour was particularly concerned about the outrage over her using the term because it could potentially cause people to be policed because of their faith. Most disturbing about this recent defamation campaign is how it is focused on demonizing the legitimate yet wildly misunderstood Islamic term I used, jihad, which to a majority of Muslims, according to the religious scholars, means struggle or to strive for, Sarsour wrote.
Well, let me just
this term has been hijacked by Muslims and extremism and right-wing extremists alike, leaving ordinary Muslims to defend our faith and, in some cases, be silenced. It sets a dangerous precedent when people of faith are policed and when they're practicing their religion peacefully, it comes with consequences. She vowed to keep fighting in spite of the attacks from the xenophobes and conservative media because dissent is the highest form of patriotism.
Well,
as she says.
Okay.
And she will not be silenced.
But who is she? And people have to understand who she is.
Yeah, she's got a long
2004,
history.
There was an article that appeared in the Columbia Graduate School of Journalism on their website. She acknowledged that a friend of hers, as well as a friend of her cousin's, as well as her cousin. So two people, a friend and a cousin, were both serving 99 plus years in Israeli jails because mm-hmm. of their efforts to recruit jihadists to murder Israeli Jews. The other thing too, she revealed that her brother-in-law was serving a 12-year sentence in Israel because of his affiliation with Hamas. However, now, of course, because she's such a great person, CARE gave her an award back in 2013. Let me just make sure.
Oh, and I'm sure she
well
deserved it.
Yeah, in 2013, the Council on American Islamic Relations presented her with the first American Muslim of the Year award. In the following year, they invited her to its 20th annual banquet, where she affectionately referred to the Council on American Islamic Relations Executive Director Nihad Awad as Uncle Nihad. And she derided, she's a big proponent of Sharia law, and she derided critics of Sharia in Saudi Arabia for worrying about, for example, women driving. It's just absolute lunacy.
Yeah, and this article ends with a great point. It says, despite being the Women's March organizer, Sarsour has been particularly dismissive of certain issues affecting women when it comes to the female genital mutilation that they found was happening on a wide scale in Michigan. And it's so interesting to see how the left, and our guest Trevor Thomas is going to talk about this next, in the next segment, how the left so quickly will lift up these radical Islamists and how they can be so hypocritical. This case, in this point, is a perfect example of that. Being the organizer of the Women's March for Women's Liberation, at the same time being a proponent of female genital mutilation, it doesn't make any sense to the rational mind. but these people continue to make news and get away with it. And I wonder if we will see any further actions from her calling for jihad against the White House and those who are occupying
the White
House.
She should be put in the same position as Kathy Griffin, the Secret Service should pay her.
Right, but she won't. She's going to be lifted up by the left. She's going to be held as a hero and some kind of martyr of free speech. And it's very disturbing to see the trend of the people, you know, on the left or the right, because they disagree with the president or his policies, that they would allow such rhetoric and calls for violence and jihad to be accepted, and not only that, to be uplifted in their political movement.
I absolutely. Now, a couple of things. I did mention this real quick on Common Sense last night, but I want to mention this. Canada. Canada is now fining its citizens for offending people.
The wrong pronouns.
Well, here's the deal. John Alabi, 53-year-old Christian male owner of some apartment buildings, is being ordered to pay a fine of $12,000 by the Ontario Human Rights Tribunal because why? He failed to remove his shoes when showing off his own apartment that was occupied by Muslims. Okay? Think about that.
What?
This is incredible. Absolutely incredible.
We'll have to get into that more.
That, as well as the Cotter family, or the Cotter guy, getting a multi-million-dollar settlement from the Canadian government for his attendance, rightfully so, at Gitmo. And there you have Justin Trudeau, of course, Faith Goldie, and others on that as well. Folks, you're listening to the Hagen Report, and right back with our guest,
Mr. Trevor Thomas.
That's right. Stay with us.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back. In a thrilling series of novels, T.C. Joseph takes us into the lives of three families who struggle to maintain normal lives in a world where conspiracy theory and Bible prophecy collide. T.C. Joseph's viewpoint of alternative history and understanding of prophetic events will change your view of the world and the events on our horizon. Kirkus Review states, readers of end times fiction will be hard-pressed to find it done more intriguingly than this. Extremely readable and fast-paced. Blue Wink Reviews boldly states, fans of Tim LaHaye's Left Behind series and Tom Perrotta's The Leftovers will find this thought-provoking series absolutely riveting. Order your copies of T.C. Joseph's This Generation series from Amazon.com. Book 1, Precipice. Book 2, Pentecost. And Book 3, Penance.
Uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable. For the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA, go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes a secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. A world dismissed as conspiracy by those who want to keep its secrets hidden. Exposing the dangers, denials, and deceptions. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.
Thank you.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Our guest coming up is Trevor Grant Thomas. Now, he his website is actually trevorgrantthomas.com.
Also a writer for The American Thinker.
Yeah, he's a prolific author. He writes for the AmericanThinker.com. And I want to thank, again, Thomas Lifton for really arranging just a tremendous number of writers for that website. Trevor Grant Thomas is the author of The Miracle and Magnificence of America. It's just a fantastic book. He's written a number of great articles of late. And, you know, one thing that we're going to talk about is one of his most recent articles at American Thinkers, the United States, our education system, how we ended up with the group of snowflakes that we have today, how we've ended up in this and where we are today. What we're seeing today is in the eyes and from the analysis of Trevor Grant Thomas is really the end result, the effect of our education system as it was designed back in the 50s. And we are seeing mm-hmm. that the byproduct of that today.
From the federalization of education and the taking over of the curriculum and turning it into indoctrination instead of a platform of learning. And sadly, they've done so in a manner that is almost genius by their ability to dumb down and take away the critical thinking skills of just about every American who goes through the educational system. His wife, that's why they also homeschool their children.
Trevor and Michelle, they're Christians. They homeschool Caleb, Jesse, Carolyn, and Noah. Trevor as well teaches high school mathematics in Gainesville, Georgia. And of course, he maintains his website, trevorgrantthomas.com, writes for American Thinker, writes for his website, also has written the book again, which is, it's a fabulous book, The Miracle and Magnificence of America. And let me just say this, you want a good read. That's a book. That's the book. How the Hand, the Word, the Wisdom, and the Blessing of God worked in the lives of individuals, events, and institutions to shape America into the greatest nation in the history of humanity. With us now, Mr. Trevor Thomas. Sir, thank you so much for your gift of time coming on our program.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. We love your work at American Thinker, your website, trevorgrantthomas.com. And of course, your book, as I mentioned, The Miracle and Magnificence of America. Today, let's talk about this leftist progressive agenda, if you don't mind. Can we start out there and how we arrived where we are today?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a topic I've dealt with a lot over the years, as you can tell if you've paid any attention at all to what I've written.
We have. And
one of the latest articles, the Vile Crazy Left.
When you wrote that, I actually read that on a Saturday morning, Sunday morning. It was a weekend, and I actually I was holding my laptop. And I said, "You got to read this," to my wife. She hates it when I do that, by the way. "You got to read this right now." So,
but I appreciate that.
Well, you know, and she was like, "Wow, you know." So yeah, let's talk about where we're at today, why we're at where we're at, and what are we going to do about it? The floor is yours.
Well. I mean, when it comes down to liberalism, I think there's not a greater danger to our culture, and what the left has done through its political agenda, what it's done to our education system, what it's done to the culture at large with our entertainment industry, it is a daily barrage. It is a daily battle. I don't know if you noticed this. Even Rush Limbaugh has stopped calling his his program, the Institute for Conservative Studies. He's referring to it now as the Institute for Anti-Leftist Studies, and so I think he realizes that's where the battle is now, especially with Donald Trump as the President of the United States. And virtually everything that I write, whether it's to do with the family and marriage, parenting, whether it's to do with our education system, whether it's to do with you know, what's going on in the political realm, what's going on in entertainment, almost everything I write is to address the attacks from the left and what they're doing to our culture, the godless attacks from the left for the most part. And that's what drives me. But as you can see on my website, as you can see on American Thinker and the other places I've written, and to a great extent, that's what motivated me to write the book.
In the book, The Miracle and Magnificence of America, folks, if you go to trevorgrantthomas.com, or you can go to Amazon and find the book there. It's almost a year old. It's a year old this month. And right. It's got some great reviews there.
But let me tell you, it's never been so relevant as it is today, especially with the news that we see coming out. It's so relevant. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was really motivated to write the book. I love history, and I love what the work that our founders did. I love examining, the Christian influence. You cannot deny, as you notice when President Trump gave his speech in Warsaw, and he was attacked and vilified for that because of what he called Western values. And to a great extent, what Western values are Christian values. And I wrote a piece, it was too long for American Thinker. It's one of the most read pieces on my site. It's a couple years old. It's entitled something along the lines of Two Shades of Dismay. And I was chronicling what liberalism and Islam are doing to the world. And in my mind, there's no greater threat to life, limb, and liberty in the world today than there are with liberalism and modern liberalism anyway and Islam. And so I draw such inspiration from the efforts of our founders, the great Christian men and women and what they went through to found this great nation, what happened in the churches during the colonial era to revive the country, to light a spark for revolution, which is what my last piece on American Thinker dealt with, and then what happened during the revolutionary period, and in the constitutional period, the creation of the greatest governing document in the history of humanity, and then the post constitutional era leading up to the Civil War era, and then beyond that into the industrial era and the age of technology as you enter the 20th century, the modern age of technology with flight and with the digital age. What my book does, I think, that is a bit unusual that you don't really see with a lot of books that try to tackle American history is the breadth of it. I go from, the time of Columbus, before America was founded and what was taking place with the Christian missionaries that were coming to South and Central America and how they worked their way into North America. And then, the English colonization of America, which, led to, of course, our founding. And so I go from that time all the way through into the 20th century and, flight, getting to the moon, the technology that was required there, the race to get to the moon, and what America did to accomplish that, and then what we did with the digital age, and what we've done in the modern era, being the lone superpower now, with our military, with our technology, with our industrial strength, although that has waned some, but and with our financial strength, we are beyond comparison in the history of humanity, and I think to no small extent due to the efforts of Christian men and women throughout history, and I definitely wanted to point that out from all the way from Columbus into the 20th and 21st centuries.
There's a couple of different directions we can go from here, but in the article that you mentioned, I think it's a 4,500 word or 4,400 word article, Two Shades of Dismay. That's on your website.
Right.
TrevorGrantThomas.com. A couple of things that struck me as really interesting, and I just wonder how many people really understand this. One, at the very start or at the close to the beginning of the article, you write that the United States government is the largest educator in the United States. About 90% of all U.S. children attend government schools. And you look at this not as education but indoctrination. So what we're being, or what the children are being taught, and what the as the Russians used to call minds full of mush, are being taught, or not being taught, but indoctrinated into this anti-Western sentiment that we're seeing come home to roost today, and that was started back in the days of Dewey and moving forward. And I like how you really connect the Muslim side of this as well to this, because we're seeing this being overwhelmed by this Islamic thought in our education system, where everything is defaulting against the West and everything's anti-West and pro-Islam or anti-capitalism and pro-socialist / communist.
I actually addressed this a couple weeks ago in a recent column. After the after another round of attacks in Europe with the Islamic terrorists, and what we see with liberalism is that the Islamists provide the bombs, the bullets, the knives, whatever means they want to inflict their terror, and to a great extent, the liberals in America and Europe provide the political cover, and provide coverage in or cover in the media as well, and I believe this is the biggest reason why. Because there's not much, when you really examine both philosophies, they don't have a lot in common except for one significant thing: a hatred for Christianity.
Yes.
And I believe that is why that's why Western civilization is attacked. That's why when Trump talks about it and tries to lift it up, it's attacked. And that's why there's so many Islamist apologists in the American media, in the liberal American media, in Europe as well, is because of the disdain for Christianity and for the Christian values. I mean, for the most part, Western values are Christian values. It was Christians who founded the United States for the most part, and wrote our founding documents, and were our early leaders, they were not perfect by any means, as my book will also bring to light. But liberals can't stand that. They need to justify the desire to make themselves their own gods, which is really the struggle for every human being when you get right down to it. We want to rule our own world, and that is in direct conflict with Christianity, with the morals that are espoused in Christianity. And so so liberals are all too willing, sadly, to look at Islam as an alternative, to Christian culture, and as a means to maybe erode a lot of those the Christian values that they so despise.
Indeed, I just want to mention this one thing again, citing your column that you referenced earlier. You wrote, it was in the pulpits of American churches that the seeds of revolution were sown. And I'm taking that out of the context of the article, of course, but I look at today's churches, you know, and I see such an apathy, and Joe has, well, Joe, I mean, you can even comment on that.
Yeah, and I agree with, how the left and Islam has this disdain and hatred for Christianity, and this is one of their unifying points. And it's not only that, what we see them doing in attacking the Word of God and all the foundations that He has established, you know, from man and woman to, you know, marriage between man and woman to, you know, natural versus GMO, you know,
correct.
We just see this constant assault on everything that He has established as good and His, including His Word and His teachings. And it's getting to the point now where, calling yourself a Christian is somehow, you know, you were considered racist or a hater or intolerant. And, even though the left is, you know, some of the most intolerant people on earth as they preach tolerance, it is very disturbing to see this hate against Christianity becoming unified amongst a number of different groups, regardless of where their political allegiances lie. And it's a disturbing trend that I think is going to lead to a prophetic end, as we read about what happens in the last days, as the Bible spells out pretty straightforward for Christians and what we're going to face.
You know, I was just thinking that, you know, I suppose we should not be too surprised, you know, at the attacks on Christians and on Christianity in general, given, you know, given what we read in Scripture and, you know, what the last days are supposed to be like. And so, you know, we need to be prepared. We need to be armed with the truth. Think about this, too. When you consider what liberalism has wrought, you know, the two biggest accomplishments, if you want to call it that, are I would say the two biggest legacies of Barack Obama are the decimation of the Democrat Party and the legal redefinition of marriage. I, you know, some people might list Obamacare. Hopefully that will be knocked down soon, and we won't have to no longer discuss that. But the legal redefinition of marriage and the decimation of the Democratic Party. You know, lots of people in the last 6 months, you know, since President Trump's election, have noticed, you know, what has happened across the country with Democrats and how many seats in state houses, you know, at the national level that they have lost. I mean, it's literally measured in the thousands. Again, this is something I chronicled recently in a piece looking at, you know, what has happened to Democrats across the country. And the same thing happened in the marriage debate, though. When you go back as recently as 2009, and U.S. states were 31-31 in rejecting same-sex marriage. And by no small margin, there were vast majorities, in some cases, you know, 80% rejection of same-sex marriage. And if you average those 31 states, it was over two-thirds. It was a little over 67% voted to reject same-sex marriage, and not just in the conservative states. Some very liberal states like Maine and California.
It was
purple
Prop
8
in California?
Yeah, right. And Colorado, some purple states like Colorado and Ohio, all rejected same-sex marriage. But nevertheless, this was my point that I made a couple of weeks ago, liberals don't need to win elections to get what they want. I mean, they lost as soundly as they've been losing, you know, in the representation in the state houses and in the U.S. Congress. They lost just as soundly in the marriage vote, but through you know, five foolish, liberal-minded justices on the U.S. Supreme Court, same-sex marriage became the law of the land. And so, you know, consider this: if liberalism can accomplish that as something as fundamental and as long-lasting, I mean. And I've written this many times. Marriage is one of the earliest truths revealed in Scripture. If you know, Adam and Eve were created very early, okay? And when Jesus mm-hmm. talked about marriage, he went back to Genesis, to Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis chapter 2, the very beginning. So marriage was one of the earliest truths revealed by God. If liberalism in the legal system of the United States, if liberalism can reverse that, what can they not accomplish? Okay, so that is why we have to be on our guard. We have to be we have to stand strong. We have, you know, it's not just in the ballot box, you know. And I believe, you know, ultimately our problems are not going to be solved by politics. Our problems ultimately are spiritual problems that require a spiritual solution. And sadly, you know, as you one of you gentlemen referenced earlier, you know, look at the apathy that's in the churches. Well, so many of our denominations, so many of our churches are corrupted by liberalism. Is there anything that liberalism doesn't corrupt? From government to schools to the church to entertainment, virtually everything it touches. So even in the church, you know, we have churches wanting to compromise on something as fundamental as marriage. That is why it's so alarming what we are up against. Because if marriage can be redefined, what cannot? You know, what can liberalism not accomplish?
Well, it's two things, and I often say this. You know, we don't have a problem with intolerance. We have a problem with tolerance. We tolerate too doggone much, and especially the vile crud on the progressive side, the liberal. Now let me ask you this: shouldn't we, as conservatives, especially conservative Christians, are we really looking at liberals, or are we looking at just full blown communists? And you might, I don't know, that might seem like a really silly question or a simple question.
Well, no, I mean, when you look at their economic philosophy, especially with those who were so behind what Bernie Sanders was trying to accomplish, I think, socialism, communism, very close to that. I was watching a documentary just yesterday, and chronicling what happened in the Soviet Union after Stalin took over from Lenin, and after he took over, confiscated farms and property, and then there was an uprising, I forget what the name of the group was, but the property owners, the people who were farming the land and producing goods that fed the country, And Stalin referred to them as profiteers, merely because they wanted to farm their own land and grow their own food and make money off of that. They were considered profiteers, and we see that with the way so many on the left attack corporations and corporate America and private property to a great extent. Sadly, and it was very interesting to me too. The people that Stalin was able to bring to his side very quickly were the people who resided in the cities, who were not property owners, did not really understand, I suppose, the work that went into, a farming and producing a product and selling that product and making a profit and then putting that profit back into your, back into your farm, back into your equipment, back into your land, back into your labor. They didn't understand that. All they understood was, I'm not making much money here in the city and I don't really own any property. So, no skin off my nose. And so he was able to organize, those folks against the property owners, against the farmers. And look, what are the most liberal places in America today? It's U.S. cities.
Oh, yeah, big cities. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. And so there, that's where blue America resides. And of course, look at what the culture is there. I mean, look at the violence, the disdain for Christian values, and for, conservative values such as property rights and whatnot. And then, sure. That's very troubling.
Yeah, it is, and you do well pointing that out in your prolific writing. You've got numerous articles at American Thinker, and of course, folks, his own website, TrevorGrantThomas.com. I love the way this man writes and the sentiment, which you're able to capture and really present in a very articulate manner. It's just fantastic. And of course, your book, as well. I highly recommend that. But we got about a minute left. Closing thoughts, and we want to have you back if you'll come back, because for a long
absolutely
discussion.
maybe we can get the Skype to work next time. I'm sorry, I've never Skyped before, and I thought I had it ready to go, and I'm sitting here and the call didn't come through, so I don't know what happened there, but maybe next time we can get the Skype to work.
No worries. But yeah, your closing thoughts.
Don't lose hope. There's always hope. I love it. I love to see conservative win elections and liberals and liberalism to get defeated. But that is not where the solutions lie. That's not where our hope is not in politics. It is in our faith. I don't hate liberals. I don't. We need to love our fellow man, whatever their political stripes. But I do hate liberalism and what it's doing to the culture, what it's doing to the country. And that's a lot of what my website and my writings on American Thinker and other places address. And so thank you very much for having me, and I would love to be back again.
Well, thank you for coming on. TrevorGrantThomas.com is the website. Thank you so much for joining us. We will definitely have you back. Folks, TrevorGrantThomas.com is the website. Bookmark it. He also is an author for AmericanThinker.com, which is a great website as well. We will be right back after these short messages. Don't go anywhere.
Greenovative. Go to HagmanReport.com. Click on the link to Greenovative. What Greenovative is, it's a small company in Florida. They created something called the G-Mag Power Cell. It produces electricity by adding salt water to this unit that recharges rechargeable batteries. It's the coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right, you need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable, it's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces, it's durable, it's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greenovative.com. That's greenovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smokeless, fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com. PreciousTimberProfits.com.